Hey, kids, it's time for
Surf Shorts!
Welcome to the Surf Shorts podcast, an innovator in modern storytelling, looking towards the future, using business terms like radical, off the lip, caught inside, and totally tubular. Surf Shorts, the storytelling podcast, recorded on VHS, then downloaded to cassette for maximum audio quality. It's totally radical.
Surf Shorts, brought to you by the good people at...
Oh, it's not crickets anymore, people. Outer Banks Hammocks, brought to you by Outer Banks Hammocks. Outer Banks Hammocks, for the ultimate lay. You can reach them on the internet at obxhammocks.com. They've got all kinds of stuff for you now. Obviously, they have hammocks and swings and chairs, and now they're breaking into outdoor furniture. They've got a lot of outdoor furniture, high-end stuff, Three Birds Casual Teak, Outer Banks Aluminum and Resin Wicker, Polly's Island Durawood, Summer Classics. They've got it all. Hit them up at OuterBanksHammocks.com. That's OBXHammocks.com/outdoor-furniture. Outer Banks Hammocks for the ultimate lay.
Surf Shorts Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Surf Shorts this week. I'm here with my buddy Ben. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing good. I appreciate you having me back on.
The funny thing about this is we've already recorded this and I had screwed the sound up, so here we go again, right? We recorded this months ago. I've noticed a disturbing trend in my podcasting. The last several weeks, the guest on my show has arrived from surfing. You were just surfing in Surf City, right?
I did, yeah. It was pretty fun, but I wish I had a shortboard, but every once in a while you get out there and you wish you had something else, but most time it's the other way around. I wish I had a longboard, but today I wish I had a shortboard, so.
Yeah, we had that conversation. Take multiple boards to the beach.
That's right. Always be prepared.
Yeah. Last week I was trying to set up Sean for being on the show. We were talking, and actually it was the day before the show, and I said, hey, dude, I don't know if you checked the surf, but it looks really good. And he was like, what? And, 2 hours later, I look at his Instagram, and it's just firing, like a picture of the surf going off, and I'm still at work. One of those deals. So this story is interesting and funny, and I think it's the confusion in the story that makes me laugh the most. So why don't you get us started? We're in Costa Rica, right?
That's right. So I had traveled a bunch different times to Costa Rica, and I had met a guy named Carlos there in previous adventures. So we had come into town into Tamarindo, and his family owned a hardware store there. So we stopped back when we were coming back through town, stopped in and just said hello to him, whatnot, and just let him know we're in town.
So back in the day, previous to this, you worked at the hardware store, right?
Yeah, I had traveled with my sister for about 6 months in Central and South America. One of the times that we split off, I ended up in Tamarindo for maybe a few weeks to a month and was just kind of had some downtime, and I just told him I'd work with him if he needed some help, and he said sure. So I worked for a couple of weeks there and surfed intermittently in between. So
little sidetrack here. Your sister's an interesting person, and she's got to be pretty cool if you traveled with her for 6 months through Central and South America, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So is this little soiree into Costa Rica, is this before or after being inside the cylinder of the volcano?
That was before. Yeah. So we went on that specific trip, we had flown to Texas and went across Brownsville and kind of backpacked, hitchhiked buses pretty much all through Mexico, Central America, till we get to Panama. And then we ended up flying to South America and went through Ecuador, Bolivia, Peru, Colombia. We started in Colombia. That's right.
These are all places with surf. So did you score surf in every one of these places, or were you just doing different things?
Yeah, we were kind of like hodgepodge. I definitely tried to surf as much as I could, but the way we were traveling, it wasn't conducive to a board, and I didn't have a bag. So it was like we would end up somewhere, I'd buy a board and then kind of sell it back and then kind of move on. So I had boards intermittently for a couple weeks at a time, typically, and then I just sell them. But yeah, so yeah, she's an interesting girl, and she's pretty tough. But
yeah, I will say this, surfboard is a pretty inconvenient hiking accoutrement.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, I was on buses, you know, 14, 16 hour bus rides with livestock on roofs sometimes, like just.
It's funny. That's exactly what I was imagining. When you're like, oh, we're on these long bus rides and I'm thinking you're going through Central and South America, I'm literally imagining the livestock on the bus. Yeah. And someone's got a chicken in a cage in their lap.
Yeah. Yeah. So we typically, the longer bus rides that we would take that would go from country to country would be kind of nicer buses. But the little short hops around the smaller cities and stuff, you never knew what was going to be on the bus. It was always quite interesting. So,
yeah. I have a guest coming up, Jonathan, in 2 or 3 weeks. He's got an extremely interesting bus story, but I'm not going to ruin it for everyone right now. So you're near Tamarindo, right?
That's right. That's a trip we were on the Caribbean side, and then both we had been on the Pacific side and the Caribbean side. But
you scored major surf on the Caribbean side, right?
We did, yeah. So I think we were on the Pacific side first, and then it was fairly flat. So it was the winter time. We went over to the Caribbean side, and we caught salsa brava pretty good. It was I think we drove through the night, and when we arrived, I remember we drove up and there was like multiple people getting out of the water with broken boards and helmets on and the whole
yeah.
thing. So.
Yeah. We're going to make that another episode.
So I wasn't really prepared for that.
Yeah. Yet. You're showing up with like a 6'2".
Yeah. Yeah. I had probably had a 6'4" most likely, but yeah, we did catch some pretty good surf on the Caribbean side. But yeah, this story starts out. So we stopped in and at the hardware store, we talked to Carlos and just kind of let him know we're in town. And He let us know that there is a bullfight, if you will, going on, which it's not like a Spanish bullfight, but more like a rodeo type situation going on the weekend. So we decided we would meet up with him on the weekend and go out to the bullfight.
And the bullfight is inland, right? Like out in the country?
That's right. Yeah. So we picked him up. We had a rental car and then we drove, I don't know, half an hour, 45 minutes inland.
But back then the country was the country.
Yeah, yeah. So this was probably probably late 90s, I guess. So we didn't really have, you know, we're pretty much relying on him pretty much for everything. None of us spoke Spanish very well. And so he's guiding us, taking us, you know, to where we're going. And we're kind of putting all our faith in that. So that's maybe where we went a little bit wrong, but
he's the guy, maybe the trust shouldn't have been placed then.
Yeah. I mean, he was a good guy, but also, partook in hijinks quite a bit, which we that night found out about a little bit later. So we arrived at kind of in the middle of nowhere to this kind of, it was a field like area, and the arena, if you will, was kind of a makeshift. It was not like a permanent stadium, like a soccer stadium or anything like that. It was more like a pole barn style building that was put up temporarily. More.
Yeah. Like a big circus tent.
Exactly. So and
I think we talked about this before, you know, that's not uncommon for rodeos, especially like Central America, Mexico, and other countries, Central America, they have these traveling rodeos. I remember last time we talked about this, you know, I told you that there's a traveling rodeo that comes through South Carolina and comes to the Horry County Myrtle Beach Fairgrounds. And we witnessed that being put together one day, and it was quite an event. I mean, there were tons and tons of people coming to this out of the woodwork, like dressed to the nines.
It was probably pretty similar to that, except maybe a little bit more archaic, the building materials, I can only imagine. But yeah, so we arrived, there's quite a bit of people there, you know, we parked and we kind of approached the stadium, and there was, you know, bleachers more or less, and then you could go underneath of the bleachers, which is kind of, we started following him underneath the bleachers. And again, we kind of put our trust in him as far as what we were doing. So we just kind of make our way through a pretty large crowd underneath the bleachers. And then he steps over a couple of kind of large timbers. We've kind of followed him out. And then next thing we knew, to our surprise, we were basically in the arena of the bullfighting ring.
Yeah. It, not in the stands.
That's right. We were not in the stands. We were inside of the arena where the bulls would be.
In the dirt and the manure.
That's right. So, you know, it was, we were a little bit you know, taken back because we didn't realize that that's what the game plan was. So we kind of got into the arena and then just kind of looking around, and then there are folks in the stands and people are yelling things and throwing things and screaming. So I don't think they typically probably would have seen, you know, a bunch of gringos inside the arena.
So it's like Carlos, who is a local, and four gringos.
And there's a few handful of other folks in there as well. It's not like we're the only folks in there, but I don't think there were anybody that was inside of the arena that was sober as well. That was the other thing.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm imagining four gringos caught in the bullpen of a Costa Rican traveling rodeo. And the picture in my head is, you know, t-shirt, some board shorts, flip-flops, and beer.
That's exactly right. White t-shirts and board shorts and flip-flops is pretty much.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm a white t-shirt guy, too. Like, no logo, just white t-shirt, right?
That's right.
And locals that are partaking in this event standing beside of you are less than sober?
Yes, exactly. So Carlos, once we got there and we're in the arena, we're it's really pretty impossible to be low profile, but we were attempting to be low profile, but
it's hard to be low profile when everyone is staring at you, right?
That's right. But Carlos immediately was kind of up to hijinks, and so he started throwing bottles at other folks that were in the arena and then turning around and making it seem like we had done that almost to the point where like he was like starting a fight. So I would immediately would have to like point to him, you know, it's like he, you know, and I didn't speak any Spanish either. So we're like pointing and then he's laughing. So they kind of figured it out.
So that, you know, you could point in Spanish.
Yeah.
Now he's throwing these bottles at, are there. So there's so much drinking going on, right? And the stands, the people in the stands are throwing stuff at you.
That's right.
So there's just empty bottles laying around.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep, empty bottles, cans, et cetera. And so he's just picking stuff up and throwing stuff at other people and trying to make us as uncomfortable as possible, which he really didn't need to do because we were already at that level.
You had achieved maximum discomfort.
So the story gets real interesting here in a minute because an announcer comes on and starts saying a whole bunch of stuff in Spanish, which we didn't really understand. And immediately the arena erupts. And Carlos, as well as everyone else that was inside of the inner arena there, started running away from the gate. And I didn't realize until I kind of, you know, took a second to kind of figure out what was going on. But everybody was scattering. And so about a second or two, there's four white guys in the middle of this arena and everyone else is running. So we just kind of followed suit and started running as well. Carlos starts running to the side and the stadium has kind of like poles. And so you can climb up the poles and kind of get away from the bulls. And so it's kind of a makeshift ladder, if you will.
Right. Like the fence boards are gapped a little bit so you can sort of shove your foot in there.
That's right. Yeah. And that's what Carlos did. He beelined for the wall, which it's around, you know, circular arena. And then he starts climbing up. So we're, you know, 20 feet behind him running. And at that point they've actually released the bull and he's actually running out towards us in our general direction. So at this point, we for all intents and purposes, are running for our lives. So he's climbing up, ascending the wall, and we're right there behind him and climbing up. And the bull literally comes like to our feet as we're climbing, ascending this wall. And so I'm just like, what the hell is going on here? What's going on? And he goes, well, the announcer just said that this particular bull they just released had killed two horses and a person at the last event. So everybody, as soon as they heard that, everybody started scattering. And in
the United States, right? That would be a bull crap thing, but you know, probably this is true.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any other reason to believe otherwise. So, you know, and Like I said, this is not a Spanish bullfight. This is, you know, a bull that's released. It's, as far as I asked, they put rubber bands around their testicles, get the bulls fired up, and then they let them out. And what the locals do there, they just go out and they taunt the bull. They don't do anything really more than that. They'll slap the bull in the butt and try not to get gored is really what they're going for. And like I said, they're almost all drunk.
So that's how you score points. Like a hand to the bull's butt, that's 1 point.
Yeah.
Not getting gored, yeah. That's 1,000 points.
But we did see people that I would guess were severely injured that night. So another interesting part was there was not a whole lot of action with that particular bull. And they corralled that bull and put him back in the pen eventually. People did get off the walls, but there weren't, you know, real, they didn't have a whole lot of guts to go out and really mess with that particular animal. But on the latter ones, people were getting off the wall and they were slapping the bull. We did see a couple folks get gored. It is, I guess they have kind of like a, and I'm sure if you watch rodeo, probably not a whole lot of crossover here from surfing to rodeo, but if you watch rodeo, you know, I think there's like this unspoken rule. If somebody's injured, you distract the bull and they try to get the injured person out of the arena. And at least where we were, they had these little cutout, like 2x2 holes in the wall with like a piece of plywood on it. And they literally would scrape this person off the ground and they'd throw them through this 2x2 plywood hole, which I can only assume is, you know, a 4x4 pickup on the other side that's going to then drive them to the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they drag you straight through the wall, through the manure, through the mud, through the wall, and then you land in an ambulance. But the ambulance is someone's four-wheel drive truck.
That's right. A pickup truck of some sort. But yeah, we saw several people get basically gored, thrown up in the air and, you know, down on the ground. And they did, like, there was this kind of like, you know, would be brotherhood where people kind of would get together and distract the bull so they could get that person up and out.
So like the regular drunkards like yourself would spontaneously turn yourself into the rodeo clown.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
There were no rodeo clowns, but we would all be rodeo clowns enough.
Oh, there were radio clowns. Rodeo clowns. There were some rodeo clowns for sure.
Yeah. Just long enough to get that individual up and into a safe harbor, if you will. Yeah. It was a very wild and interesting night that I'll never forget. But yeah, Carlos, he set us up on that night. So.
Yeah, I imagine that's one of those. The next morning, you wake up and you're like, did this happen?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It was a wild night for sure. I will remember that for as long as I live.
Hey, I've got to ask you for the listeners, how many points did you score?
I did smack at least one bull. I do remember on the rear end. So I think out of the four of us, I think about two or three of us did partake in that part, but it took a little bit of while from the first bull that came out kind of had us on our heels. So we were inching out, you know, further and further from the walls. And that was the game. It was like you would go out to the you know, get a little closer to the middle and then they charge you and then you get to the wall. So it was constant like cat and mouse. You were, you know, the other side would distract the bull and then people on our side would come out and so forth. But
yeah, it's the ultimate game of tag.
Yeah.
And when you lose, you lose.
That's right. Thankfully none of us in our grouping did not, nobody was injured there, but
yeah, I can see you calling your sister, you know, in Colombia or Peru. Look, not going to make it for a while because I was gored by a bull on the surf trip.
Yeah. And she has probably more interesting stories than I do. I know when we were traveling, she was almost would be kidnapped when we were in Colombia, and there were several Americans that had been kidnapped during that duration. So we kind of hightailed it out of Colombia when we were there. But yeah, she's got
that actually happened to like a high school girlfriend of mine. Like she was almost kidnapped in Mexico, and I was like, "What were you doing traveling there by yourself?"
Yeah.
Well, anyway, dude, thank you so much, and everybody at home, you guys need to thank Ben too because we did this before and I screwed up the sound. There was feedback. And sincerely, thanks, brother.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Later.
All right, y'all, listen. I say surf, you say shorts. Surf.
Shorts.
Surf.
Shorts.
I say, wait a minute. I think that pretty much covers it. All right, everyone. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening to Surf Shorts this week. We've got a lot of exciting things come up. Something I'm really looking forward to and I really, really hope to happen is I hope to have Carter on the show pretty soon. Carter catches waves on Instagram. He's the kid. He's surfed about 1,000 days in a row, so he's making us all look bad. Really, really hope to link up with him. I want to thank Ben again for coming on the show. We did the show before and I ruined it, so he went through a lot of trouble to come back out. I tell you what, the whole bull rink thing is gnarly, the traveling rodeo. I was thinking about the traveling rodeo and the little board they have to shuffle people out of the arena. You are planning on people getting hurt when you've got a built-in door. I mean, at motocross races and dirt bike events, Ben and I have raced some dirt bike races before. We did a Grand Prix. There's always an ambulance or two there, but I mean, there's not like a special door to drag us off the track and throw us into an ambulance to take us away. So that's pretty gnarly. Everybody stick around. Thanks so much for Surf Shorts. Thank you for being here. Make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite place. Thanks so much. See you next Thursday.